Hello, everyone. Dr. Mackenzie Brooks here. Welcome to Women's Work of Quickening. This is what women do. All over our planet, incredible women are engaged in all kinds of life essential, life respecting, life supporting, and life enhancing actions. We at drmackenziebrooks.com are collecting their stories, compiling them in one location for women to access, to listen, and perhaps to be inspired by the inner and outer journeys that these women of voice and action are walking. Every story shared by these women of voice and action offer the rest of us an opportunity to learn and benefit from the life learnings and wisdoms that these women have gained on their heroic journeys and now are willing to share with us. My deepest desire is that you enjoy listening to this inspiring woman as much as I have enjoyed engaging in this interview conversation with her. Today is October 4th, 2015, and I am pleased to introduce Deborah Aboud. Deborah acknowledges the unceded traditional territory of the Coast Salish peoples and offers her gratitude for the privilege of being able to live, play, and work on beautiful Vancouver Island. Deborah has a strong background in program design, development and implementation, counseling, community development, training, and management of health and social programs in the not-for-profit sector. Deborah has had the privilege of working alongside Indigenous peoples and Aboriginal organizations for many years and is inspired by a holistic approach to wellness that embraces mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual balance. Deborah's recent expression of her life to date is the publication of the first in an intended collection of four books dedicated to the message that every child is precious and sacred. The first publication, I Was Born Precious and Sacred, will be followed by the second book, I Know I Am Precious and Sacred, later this fall. Though these books were written as an invitation for children to develop a sacred relationship with self and all life force, the message is a universal truth for every being. Deborah is well known and respected for her passion, integrity, sense of humor, and commitment to universal change, social justice, and respecting and healing this precious planet. For more information and to purchase the precious and sacred books, please visit Peppermint Toast Publishing at www.pepperminttoast.com. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Mackenzie. It's great to hear your voice today.
So, Deborah, please tell us how you found yourself doing what you do.
That's a big question, and I think I've been reflecting at this stage in my life about direction and how my core self fits into what it is that I'm doing. And when I reflect on that, because I do think I'm in a bit of a, not a crossroads, but maybe a transition part of my life, I'm not sure what that will look like. One of the things that I've realized is that when I stay connected to my inner self, doorways open. And I've thought about how throughout my life, I've never really actively, consciously chosen specific things most of the time, but rather have been willing to wait and see what happens and opportunity and doorways open. And sometimes it's taken courage to walk through those, and other times I've kind of floated easily through them. That's kind of it in a nutshell, I think.
Thank you, Deborah. So for yourself, you have, as you said, floated through, and it worked for you. Has something changed at this time in your life?
I think there's lots of change. I remember thinking for many years when I was younger that when I reached adulthood, or a particular time in adulthood, that developmental phases stopped. Somehow I saw development in humanness. At different times, up until kind of maybe mid-adulthood, and then I think I believe that things held steady there until maybe elderhood. And several years ago, I realized that that was erroneous thinking for me, just in relationship to myself, and that rather life was a continual journey of developmental pieces. So I find myself in another developmental piece right now, and I'm not sure how that will unfold. And yet I trust that it's unfolding in a way that will remain congruent and in alignment with my values and beliefs and my core self.
So in terms of your life's journey and the path you've taken and the choices you've made and the actions that you have taken, can you share with us some of the actions that you have taken that from your point of view you were compelled to act upon?
I think that when I was a very, very young child, I remember reading a book many years ago that was a real gift in my life at that time, and it was called The Feminine Face of God. And I remember having resistance to reading that book because I was doing a lot of inner world work regarding my growing up years with organized religion. It wasn't in a profound way because there was balance in my family system around that. However, the particular religion that was practiced by part of my family taught things that for me were fear-based, shame-based, guilt-based. And I remember early on having an experience in which I had an experience that called me into something bigger than what I understood the world around me, is the best way that I can say it. And I remember having an experience in which the adults around me didn't see or didn't witness and couldn't experience. And I knew in that moment, that single moment, that I saw things or heard things or knew things that they didn't. And I don't remember as a young kid whether or not I thought that was because they were adults or not. I don't remember. But I absolutely knew that what I had experienced was true. And then I had another experience, which was a relationship with this beautiful Manitoba maple tree that lived in the yard across from where I was growing up. And I used to play with that tree and hide up in that tree and climb that tree and just be with that tree. And I knew that there was this reciprocal love and understanding between that tree and myself as a little kid. I absolutely knew that. Later on, as I became a bit older, probably about 9 or 10, I started to actively become a critical thinker around what I was being taught by organized religion and how that was out of alignment for me in my beliefs about two very, very important people in my world. And one was my father and one was my best little friend. And I knew that there was something inherently wrong with some of the teachings that I was receiving by the church because of the judgment and the way that the church cast this judgment upon people like my father or my best little friend because they didn't practice that particular type of religion. And I started to not trust what I was being told and what I was taught that I should practice because of the church. And I think from that early place on, I started to understand for myself that there were things that were, and I wouldn't have had the language then, inside myself, my spirit, my heart, my gut, I knew that what I was being told was not only was it not true for me, it was unjust and unfair and unkind. And I think that's where the root took hold for me as a child. I was also modeled that by my father, who was a critical thinker, and who was a very wise person. And although he was a human and had lots of character flaws and all of those kinds of things, he really, really modeled to me integrity, wisdom, courage to be a critical thinker, and courage to not assume that what I was being told was the truth. That was the beginning, I think, of a long life to date of taking positions which are not always popular. In fact, they usually are not. Being willing to stand up and take a position regarding things that in my belief system do not fit or lack integrity or that are unjust or unkind or unfair. And that's really been, I think, the core of a lot of my life to date, and I assume it will continue that way.
How did you begin to manifest what was rooted in your inner core into your outer life?
Well, I think I started university in 1970, and at that time, the war in Vietnam was a huge, huge global issue. And I remember the campus that I attended and went to university in those days was known as, a fairly left-wing campus. What it taught me, it was the perfect venue for me to walk into a doorway of organized, people taking an organized position regarding something that those of us who thought was being done for the wrong reasons. It provided a platform to take a position and in an organized way so that there were many, many people coming together in a collective way to take a stand about something that they believed was just wrong and unfair and unjust. And that was really, I think, the beginning of me participating in organized, what I would call social change and social justice. I think after that, and of course in the 70s, there were so many things that were going on in terms of the women's movement and the peace movement and later on the anti-nuclear movement and working with indigenous people through the American Indian movement later on. Those organized movements that were always grassroots. They started with people working together in what they believed was the higher good. And often that approach to life and challenging and witnessing something that needed, in our belief systems, needed to be different, it provided an opportunity for people to come together in a collective voice, and that always spoke to me. And I think part of why it spoke to me is because I grew up in a culture that was a collectivist, I believe, a collectivist ideology, which means that you are part of the whole collective and that you as yourself are responsible to not only to self, but to the higher good of the collective that you are a part of. And so I think at a cellular level, I carry that memory, even though I'm second generation Canadian or settler ally, as the new language is. I think at a cellular level, I carry some memory of what it means to be part of a collectivist nation of people. And so I think those doorways in my life that have opened up before me have been opportunities for me to live in alignment, not always fully, certainly, however, in a way in which I do believe that I am living the best that I'm able to in integrity and living in a consciousness that is greater than just myself. It's connected to the larger picture and to the universe and to our planet. So those are the doorways, I think, that have invited me to and allowed me the opportunity to participate in something that is bigger than self.
More recently in your life, how have you been manifesting what has taken root at your core?
I think that the work that I've chosen or that has chosen me, because I often have experienced, as I said earlier, it's not that I've actively gone out and thought, okay, I want this as a career or this as employment or this as opportunity. I think that the work that I have done for the last many, many years has been that of a witness and walking alongside Indigenous communities in this part of the world, and has opened up doorways for me to share who I am and to learn from who others are. And again, I think at the basis of those relationships is an ideology that speaks to me, which is one of collectivism. And despite whatever the struggles and the barriers have been for myself personally and or for the community or communities that I've had the privilege and honor of walking alongside, there is something absolutely inherent in those belief systems that speaks to me. And again, I think that that connects to that cellular level or cellular memory of people who understand that there is a greater good, which is connected to the land, which is connected to the very life force that provides us as a species a place to be, a place to exist. And I also believe that despite the barriers and obstacles that are laid before Indigenous peoples globally, actually, more specifically, I understand this area because it's the territory that I've lived and worked on for many, many years. I think that many of the answers that we as a species need at this time are rooted in and come from people who are the first people, who were the first people of the land and who understand, have an innate understanding of a connection to the land and to the planet. And so my intention, I think, is to try and bridge and link up my own belief systems with those that are similar so that again, I'm working in a collective way. I have tremendous concern, heart-wrenching concern about where we as a species are going. And I have equal tremendous concern about the planet, about Mother Earth, about this amazing, amazing garden planet that has allowed us life. So I try and live my life in a way that the values that I hold that are really, really important to me are reflected in the community around me. And I have found that for myself to be, I guess, mirrored in enough good ways in Indigenous communities that I have a sense of purpose there. When I think about that more deeply in some of the current pieces that I'm working on, because I worked in the area of trauma for so many years and different forms of trauma and kind of, and again, that began for me, the education around trauma really began for me when I was in university, because that was the first time that Vietnam war vets were coming back with post-traumatic stress, and that was finally being recognized as something that was a reality and a normal response for a human being to have when a human being is placed in circumstances and situations that are not healthy or normal. And that rather than it being seen or categorized or judged as low moral fiber or whatever those old words were during earlier global wars, the understanding that when we take life force and put it into an environment that is harmful and damaging, very harmful and very damaging, and then expect people to behave as though nothing has happened is just to me a ridiculous concept and kind of amoral and inhumane. So the years that I've had to witness journeys of individuals and groups of people who have survived individual and or community and or collective trauma, including attempted genocide, I've learned a lot about the strength of the human spirit, about the strength of the heart and the body and the mind. And a long, long time ago, I had this amazing gift of working with children who'd been traumatized. And what I came to understand through that, through my own lens and my own life system, was that when children were provided a safe environment to tell their story and be truthful, there was healing that was an organic process that came from that. And I started to form a belief that if every child was a child who was welcomed into the world with love and honor and respect, and treated with respect and honor, and valued with respect and honor, and understood what that meant for each one of them, the world might be and could be and would be a different place. And I started to formulate thoughts about that many years ago, and most recently that has been published in a small, simple children's book called I Was Born Precious and Sacred. That's my most recent kind of, I don't want to say project, because that project doesn't do it, it doesn't serve it. It's my contribution, I guess, is how I want to say it.
Thank you, Deborah, and I understand that you have a second children's book in the works as well.
Yes, so I thought of when I had written pieces of the first book a long, long time ago, and again, it's very, very simple concepts, because it's meant for little people from when they enter the planet in the earliest stages when we start reading to children. And the concept behind that was to tell children from the day they're born that they were born precious and sacred. And then I started to formulate developmentally what that means for children to carry that message through. And so the second little book now, which is designed for the next developmental stage of children, is a book called I Know I Am Precious and Sacred. And so it's a child asking a grandfather, what does it mean? And the grandfather explaining to a child in rhyme, in very simple concepts, that knowing that you are precious and sacred means these things. And the vision that I have behind these little books is that there will be four. And the third book, I'm hoping, will be a book that speaks to children about when you have that home base, I call it home base, which is that inner world connection to the world around you, to self and to the world around you, and it's anchored in Mother Earth and to a life that is so much bigger, to life force that is so much bigger than our own being. And when we can always come home to that place, despite obstacles, barriers, hardships, difficulties, harm, children can return there. And so the third book is how it's intended, my vision, the intention for it is that how do you return home and how do you hold that core belief system that you are precious and sacred when someone tries to do harm to you. And the fourth book is, I think, will be the most difficult, because when I worked with children, one of the pieces of work that I would do with them is ask them whether or not they'd ever thought about or wondered about or planned to do harm to others the way that they had been harmed. And I realized doing that work many, many years ago that frequently in life, children make that decision early on in life that they will indeed harm others, or they've already started doing that, or they would never do that because they have compassion and empathy and a conscience that's connected. So they're connected internally. heart, body, mind, and spirit. And the intention behind the fourth book is for children to understand that they need to be able to come home to that sacred place inside, to their core sense of who they are, to know that when they've been harmed, it's not their fault, that it's not about them, that they can give that story back to the person or people who've harmed them, and that they need to come home and remain in alignment with their own sense of true self, despite whatever it is that has happened to them and despite what it is that they would like to do to others that is again, creating or recreating harm. So that's the intention. We'll see how that unfolds.
What impact has taking action had on your life?
I think that there's been impact that spans on a continuum. I think that there has been extremely positive impact. And I think on the other end of the continuum, there has been impact that's been very painful and very difficult. I remember when I was a kid, my dad once said to me, because I was resisting something or challenging something, I don't remember the context, and he said to me, "Deb, the whole army is out of step. You're the only one that's marching to the drum." And I remember I wasn't old enough to understand what that content actually meant, what I knew is that he was telling me something very important, and that I have held that to the deepest part of me since. And I think that the positive impact for me as a human being, as a life force energy, is that I wake up in the morning and I can look in the mirror and I'm grateful to who I see. So at that personal, individual level, it impacts me to know that I respect myself, which is another message that I neglected to say about the little books, is around just self-respect and self-love and self-care, no matter what. I think in the bigger picture, I'm hopeful that some of the work that I've done and some of the participation that I have had the privilege of being part of in my life, that it does open up conversation and dialogue. It invites critical thinking, which to me is one of the most important things that we need to do as a species, is to be critical thinkers. And not so that everyone agrees with us, however, that everyone invites their own knowing to come forward and to really examine the things that we're being told we should believe. I think that I absolutely know that some of the things that I've participated in my life have created change, which from my measurement and judgment and perspective have been positive. For example, part of an amazing group that I belonged to in Saskatchewan for many years, which was an anti-nuclear group, way back when discussions around nuclear power plants and nuclear energy were at a height. And in those days, Saskatchewan was mining uranium in northern Saskatchewan, and the radioactive materials that were being left in tailing ponds that were left wide open and exposing nature and wildlife and the indigenous peoples of those territories had a profound negative effect. And yet we as a collective group of people, grassroots again, published several books, were able to stop a uranium refinery from being developed in prime farmland in Saskatchewan, were proactive in educating people about some of the concerns around nuclear development, if you can call it that. To me, nuclear and development don't belong in the same sentence. So that's one area where there's concrete examples. I think the response to this first little book, which was just published. Actually, it was released a year ago now, just a year ago, has been profound, and it has really shocked me and surprised me, because I had no attachment to it other than to, I knew that there was an opportunity and a way to finally publish this little book in an environment that it would matter and be meaningful. And yet I think because the message is so simple, it just has had this ripple effect. It's profound to me in the sense that I feel like it's spirit-led, and that I'm just kind of on the back of the caboose hanging on for the ride. It's in its second printing already, and it has now reached parts of British Columbia, Alberta, and Saskatchewan, and is being used widely in everything from hospitals to schools to health units. It's really quite amazing to me. So I think, if nothing else, what it has done is it has formulated a statement that is so simple, and people are inviting that in their lives, because I think we are, I think as a species, we're running on fear. Everybody's afraid. There's scary stuff out there, and it's unwinding and unraveling very quickly, and our attempts to try and catch it or run behind it or run ahead of it or catch up to it are quite overwhelming at times. So I think anything that invites dialogue or speaks to the heart of people or speaks to the spirit of people, to me, is positive impact.
As a woman, what have you learned?
There are so many levels as a woman, I think, to learn. And as a woman who's had the honor of living this many years, when I was younger, it never occurred to me I would live to the age I am now. I think I've learned lots around women and around humans and around consciousness. For me, I think that one of the most important things I've learned is that it's important, it's essential, it's mandatory, it's life-serving to always come to home base and to check in with that deepest part of us, no matter how many other layers might be wound around it or how much resistance there may be from our own inner world and or the outer world, that there is a place deep inside of each and every person, I believe, and particularly for women, that knows a truth that is bigger and more important than the one we're being told. So I think as a woman, growing up at a time when the women's movement was really just beginning to take off, what I've learned is that women have to work harder. I've learned that women carry an innate knowledge and wisdom and inherent truth. I've learned that equality and women's liberation does not mean behaving in a consciousness like as the one that we were trying to undo. I have learned that women know from the deepest part of them what's important. I've learned that when women speaking at truth that is challenging or critical thinking toward the status quo or the message that we are supposed to blindly accept as the correct one, that we are often pathologized and words like crazy are used. I've learned that still there is a part of this part of the world that reveres and respects and honors strong women, and at the same time, there is another part that is terrified. I've learned that in order for me to keep moving forward in alignment with my deepest core of self, that I have to constantly be mindful and aware of my intention. And also the parts of me that have learned learned well the messaging from kind of the blueprinting or for lack of a better word, kind of societal programming because of the time in which I grew up, that I need to be mindful about, you know, when I receive more than one internal message, because sometimes they're conflicting, and how I unwind those to come back to the truth that I know. I think those are some of my major lessons in life. When you asked me earlier about impact, I was reflecting on the environment that I currently work in and the potential for positive impact that I have in my role, which is a real privilege, and how there are women and men and different ages, and how so many of those people really are critical thinkers, and how they look for like-minded spirits and hearts where they engage in lively, fruitful discussion, sometimes debate, and where they can hold, where we can hold more than one truth simultaneously and operate from a place, try and operate from a place where we can hold different opinions and different thoughts and different beliefs without buying into the old extreme of all or nothing, bad, good, superior, inferior, all of those concepts that most of us in mainstream society have been taught with intention and purpose is my belief. So I think those are some really important things that I've learned. I've learned also that at this stage in my life, I always want to be mindful and respectful. However, I'm no longer attached to some of the things that I was attached to earlier in my life. I was listening to a program with David Suzuki yesterday on CBC, and he was talking about being an elder, and at this stage in his life, close to 80, he said he is no longer attached to hurting people's feelings or, you know, people being offended by what he said or says, and that if they're offended, it's their problem. And I'm becoming closer and closer to that. Not to operate from arrogance, however, to just put out, state who it is that I am, always be open-minded or mostly be open-minded, and still not have to defend or really even explain away why I think the way I do. And I find the environment that I have the opportunity to work with people in is that mostly people welcome that, and I'm grateful for that.
What are women's strengths and wisdom?
I think that I reflect on the strength and the wisdom of the women that were in my life from the time I was a newborn until I left home. And those women were profoundly strong women. They were first generation settlers. They came from a part of the world where it was a Mediterranean climate to come to southern Saskatchewan as pioneers. And I think what I learned in that with those women, three in particular, my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, my aunt, my father's sister, and my first cousin, who were all part of raising us in an extended family setting, even though we lived in independent housing. What I saw was that they had a strength that almost defies description. It's just they moved forward. They kept going in life no matter what life put in front of them. There was a survival instinct and a survival mechanism and a survival vehicle that carried them forward no matter what. I learned from those women integrity, strength. I learned that they understood that working together and collectively is what would serve them, served not only their individual needs, but the collective needs. I learned that they understood, absolutely understood who they were, even though they were, I guess in a way I want to say dislocated, because they were, you know, my grandmother came to Canada as a young girl, as a young teen. There was a sense of dislocation in a way. However, there was that place that they always, always modeled truth and integrity and moving forward. And they looked after one another. And I think that that's women, what women do. They intuitively know how to look after one another, even when there's difficulty or hardship. In terms of wisdom, I think that women, and one can argue, you know, women are the bearers of life. They carry life. It, you know, life is dependent on them as the bearers of children. I think inside of us, I really, really believe that there is a medicine, there is a knowing, there is an absolute truth that lives with each one of us. Sometimes we have to dig deep to find it. Sometimes we really have to drill down to reconnect with it. If we can connect to that part of ourselves, we hold amazing wisdom. And all we ever have to do is ask ourselves to that part, those parts of us, when we drill down deep, is we just need to ask questions, because the answers, I do believe the answers in the medicine lie within there. I think in terms of wisdom, we have a profound understanding of the linkage between our ability to sustain, to give life, to sustain life, to nurture life, and a connection that is rooted in Mother Earth, the greatest mother of all. And we understand intuitively and innately that we cannot continue to behave the way that we are behaving on this planet and expect her to carry on. I think women understand collective wisdom. I think women understand working together. I think women understand heart, body, mind, spirit. I think women innately understand holistic way of being in the world. I think women's wisdom understands that there is never only one answer that is right or correct. Sometimes there is only one thing that may be right or correct to do. However, I think that women's wisdom offers that there are shades of color in the world, and that we don't have to operate in extremes, all or nothing, good, bad, wrong, right, superior, inferior. I think women and their wisdom allows respect for the continuity of life force. And I think that women's wisdom holds this deep, deep truth that we cannot and will not survive if we denigrate, dehumanize, plunder, pillage one another, and more importantly, at this stage in my life, the planet. That's what I think women's wisdom has to offer.
What do you invite other women to know?
I think what I want, what I would invite, what I would like is to that each of us as women, no matter what our age, is that we remember. That we remember that deep inside of us there is a part that was connected deeply, deeply, deeply to a holistic way of being in the world. And if we go back and revisit that place and remember those stories, no matter what our life circumstances have been, and children have taught me this, working with children whose lives had formidable barriers, still can connect to that place, I would invite that each of us as women go back to that place and find that place of our own truth-telling. And I would invite that women, when they connect to that inner world place, that they bring that forward into the outer world. I would invite women to find whatever the support is that they need in their lives to speak the truth, a truth, their truth. I would like to invite that every woman find the support and the alliances that she requires or needs or may want in her life to be able to stand up proud and in self-respect and dignity and in honesty and make a statement about the reality of the world that we live in and how we can and will make a difference if we allow ourselves to be in touch and be connected with that. I would invite that women support other women as spirit sisters and in sisterhood. I would invite that women respect one another and are kind and generous to one another. And understand that we as women, no matter what our lives or circumstances have been, or what nation we're from, or what religion we're from, or whatever all those outer things are, that we do carry innate wisdom, no matter what our beliefs are, that we have a truth inside. And I think I would also invite that we can have a bigger place of knowing in our inner world, even if our circumstance is one that we're not able to share that outwardly. So I guess I would say always keep that part of us alive and fed and nurtured. It's important.
How can other women help?
I think that for me kind of ties into the question before. Women can help by stopping if we haven't, and taking time to be intentional. I think that we can help one another by sharing our thoughts, our experiences, our beliefs, our questions, our excitements, our sorrows. I think women can help one another by creating a safe place and a safe avenue and a safe environment to actually talk about what's real. I think women can help one another by inviting that forward in another human being. The opportunity to be real and the opportunity to speak to what matters. I think women can support one another to say, what matters to you? What's your vision for yourself? What's your vision for our planet? What's your vision for your children and your children's children? I think women can support one another and help one another by saying, what is it that you need? What is it that you believe you need? What is it that you want? And what matters to you? And I think women can support women by asking really simple questions that I think can be profoundly life-changing. Questions as simple as, do you believe that you have a spiritual purpose on our planet? Do you believe that who you are and your time here in this place is guided or important to contribute in the higher good of all? I think that women can help other women by asking them, do you believe that you have a spiritual purpose on this planet in your life? Do you believe that it's important to connect those parts, heart, body, mind, spirit? What is it that you want for yourself, for your children, for your children's children? And equally importantly, for this planet, what would matter to you? What would make a difference? And I think it's really important as women, individually and collectively, whether it's in our families and our friends, our colleagues, whether it's in our small little community, our own villages, or in a global sense, because social media allows that now, that we have a dialogue about how it could be And through my life's work, one of the things that I have really, really learned is that as soon as you give voice to something, as soon as one allows oneself to make a statement and say what's in the inner world out loud, the power of fear is changed if the reason or reasons that those things have been settling inside and never came out are fear-based. It changes. As soon as you give it words, it takes some of the power out of it. And I think one of the things that women can give other women is an invitation to remember and an invitation to think deep, drill deep, be real. I think that there is opportunity for us to support each other in the higher good. And I think those are the questions we need to ask one another and support one another in, because I do believe there could be and there will be a collective memory. However, we may have to awaken it in ourselves and invite it to be awakened in other women.
Is there anything that you would like to add before we finish our interview conversation today?
I don't think so, except to say thank you, Mackenzie, for bringing your medicine forward in this way and providing this opportunity for women to come forward and providing and encouraging and supporting women to speak these truths. I worry about the state of the earth, the state of the planet, and now I think we're headed as a species into colonizing other planets. Things are so out of balance and so in such a state of disarray and disharmony. And my true belief is that the masses of people do not want what is currently happening. I think that if globally the masses of people can find the vehicles to challenge the 1% or the 1% of the 1% or the corporate gluttons, whatever languages that we use, there is hope. What it requires is that we wake up and that we take a stand in whatever way we're able to. I think that's it for me.
Thank you, Deborah, for sharing your life learnings and your wisdom with us. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on our conversational journey together. Goodbye for now.